Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
104.5 The Zone, your home for Tennessee basketball. Tuesday, the Vols take on Lenoir Ryan. Coverage starts Tuesday after the Coach Mike Vrabel Show on 104.5 The Zone.
Oh, how I wish Dallas was in Tennessee. I could move Texas east, and she'd be here with me.
It is the Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. We are live in Dallas, Texas today. Tonight, Monday Night Football right here on Titans Radio 104.5 The Zone. Coverage begins at 5 p.m. with the Lee Company countdown to kickoff. That leads up to Titans countdown on Titans Radio, where we will be live from AT&T Stadium at 6 o'clock, and then kickoff between the Titans and Cowboys at 7:15 right here on Titans Radio 104.5 The Zone.
Ed Werder, best known for a long and distinguished career as an ESPN football reporter. Also well-known throughout Texas, his home, and now a sideline reporter for Westwood One Radio Network and broadcast of Monday Night Football games, a Cowboys expert, to say the least, and a member of the broadcast and writers, what is it, Hutton? Plaque. He's on the plaque at the Pro Football Writers, not the Pro Football Writers.
Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I'm butchering. At the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Ed Werder, we're happy to have as our guest. How are you doing, Ed? Sorry for that butchered introduction.
Well, Paul, how are you? Thanks for having me.
We're well. What's the sense? Titans feel like they're at a real turning point at 3-4, and I imagine it's very much the same for the Cowboys, which makes this a pretty compelling Monday Night Football game, even though neither team with a winning record.
Yeah, you know, I think it's hard for anybody to imagine realistically that, you know, the Cowboys could lose this game and fall to 3-5 and make a real run in the NFC East. And, you know, to his credit, and I have not often given Jerry Jones much of any credit as a general manager of the Dallas Cowboys in all the years he's owned the team, but to his credit, during their bye week, you know, they took measures to improve themselves in two identified weaknesses. You know, everybody self-scouts during the bye week. The Cowboys came to the conclusion that they needed to make a change in their coaching staff, and for the first time in Jason Garrett's 8 years as a head coach, they fired an assistant coach during the season. Paul Alexander out, former player Mark Colombo elevated from assistant offensive line coach to running the position with Hudson Houck, longtime Cowboys offensive line coach and highly regarded around the NFL, lured out of retirement. He's been in retirement for 7 years to serve in an advisory capacity. So that combined with the trade for Amari Cooper, I think really sends the message to this team that, hey, the front office is in it. They still think that they can win the division, and they've tried to make the team better in two specific spots on offense.
It's ancient history, I know, but the Joey Galloway trade, the Roy Williams trade, did not bear sufficient fruit for what the Cowboys gave up. Did that produce any hesitation from Jerry Jones with regard to Amari Cooper, or did he put those things out of his mind as ancient history?
No, I don't think he considered those when he made this trade. I think he was less concerned about history and more concerned about getting the right player who they deemed to be Amari Cooper and keeping him from going to Washington and Philadelphia, the two teams that they trail in the NFC East, both of which had interest in Cooper. And we know the Eagles had offered a second-round pick. Now, I think the interesting thing as it pertains to tonight's game in particular, Paul, is that the Cowboys have already listed Amari Cooper as their starter at the X receiver position. Stephen Jones is on the record as saying they're not easing him in. He's going to play. He's going to play a lot. They're going to get him the ball. I mean, I think the Cowboys feel a real sense of pressure to justify this trade. And perhaps maybe that's where the failed history of trading for wide receivers comes into play. You know, when people looked at what happened at the trading deadline, there were 9 trades in the NFL, and the Cowboys were the only team to surrender a first-round pick for the player that they acquired. Nobody else even gave up a second-round pick. But there's a difference between, you know, what the Eagles did for Golden Tate and what the Texans did to acquire Demaryius Thomas. Those guys are both, you know, 30 years old. They're in the last year of their contracts. Amari Cooper is a two-time Pro Bowl player. He's only 24. He's signed for next year. So the Cowboys view this as a long-term commitment. That they now have a young quarterback, a young running back, and a young receiver to build their offense around going forward beyond this year. And that's not necessarily the case with the other two teams who acquired receivers for much less.
Ed Werder, our guest on the Midday 180, served up by Wendy's. Ed, where does Dak Prescott leave fans and media, and coaches for that matter, longing for more after what we saw from his rookie season to now?
Well, I think there's been a lot of frustration about his, you know, numbers in the passing game and how frequently in a situation where the game, you know, really encourages teams to throw the football and makes success much easier to achieve, that there are so many games where Prescott doesn't throw for even 200 yards. And I think part of the problem, beyond the personnel, which, you know, I mean, he lost Dez Bryant and Jason Witten this offseason. Those two players ranked first and second in receiving on the team last year and had accounted for 44% of the receptions. So that was a lot to lose and really not adequately replace in any sense at all. And so I think he was... he has suffered for that, and then I just think, you know, there's still this love affair in Dallas with Romo. I've never seen a player be more embraced after he retired, even though he really never won anything of consequence, than Romo still is. There's still the feeling that, you know, the Cowboys should have gone back to Romo when he was healthy back in 2016. Forget that the Cowboys had won 11 straight games under Dak Prescott. Forget that he was the Offensive Rookie of the Year. You know, Romo would have gotten that team to a Super Bowl, even though he had failed with two previous number one seeds in the NFC playoffs. So he suffers for all of those things. And I think, to a certain extent, the coaching staff with Jason Garrett, you know, they, and we kind of see this again with the Hudson Hauk, return of Hudson Hauk, is that they can't get out of the 90s mindset when they were a dominant team and won three Super Bowls in 4 years. They still think that works. And that's kind of how their team is constructed, and they haven't really embraced the revolution that we've seen among these quarterbacks like Prescott, like Marcus Mariota, like Patrick Mahomes and Carson Wentz, guys who run. I mean, if you look every week in the NFL stats now, there's five or six quarterbacks who lead their team in rushing every week. And so I think the Cowboys have been slow to embrace and emphasize the kind of quarterback that Dak Prescott is, and that's a guy who can do as much damage running the ball as he can throwing it.
Speaking of some of the guys that would slow down somebody like Marcus Mariota if he happened to be taken off tonight, how does Sean Lee and Leighton Vander Esch fit together if and when they're both on the field?
Well, you know, the Cowboys were criticized during, you know, this period of time where they haven't generated a lot of offense for not taking Calvin Ridley with their first-round pick, as he, you know, he's got seven touchdowns as a rookie in Atlanta. But I think the, you know, taking Leighton Vander Esch instead has been justified by the way he's played, not only since Sean Lee went out, which, you know, in previous years they couldn't figure out a way to win a game without Sean Lee, but he's continued to play. So I think they'll continue to kind of rotate him and Jalen Smith and Sean Lee at the two different linebacker positions that are on the field most of the time. I think he's, you know, they love what Sean Lee brings to a game, his intensity, his understanding, his instinctive play. But they also value Vander Esch's range and his ability in the passing game. So I think all three of those guys are going to continue to play, with probably Vander Esch getting less of the playing time than the other two.
Ed Werder, our guest. You can follow him on Twitter at EWerderRFA. Ed, going around the league a bit and looking at it from a coordinator perspective, who do you think is the best play caller in football today?
Well, I think that's really tough, and I say that having just listed the five guys that I think are the best in football yesterday. As impressed as I am with what Norv Turner has done with Cam Newton over time, and you know the way Josh McDaniels seems to reinvent the Patriots offense based on the personnel he has at hand, I don't think there's anybody that's better to adjusting on a weekly basis than he is. I ultimately think it comes down to Sean McVay and Sean Payton, and we saw them both at their best yesterday. I'm going to go with Sean Payton. I just think he's genius at the way he creates all these different personnel groups. He uses like different personnel groups three times as often as a guy like McVay. To be scoring like they score and achieve what they have over time with Drew Brees, I think that's pretty remarkable and something that's going to be very difficult to replicate. And I think you have to consider Andy Reid in that group, too. He was probably one of the first people to really embrace the very thing we were talking about before, the new option style of quarterbacks who were coming into the NFL and being able to take advantage of that. He did it with Alex Smith, and he's doing it even more with Patrick Mahomes.
Ed Werder, our guest. After New England and Kansas City in the AFC, is there a team that you really believe in?
I guess I would say the Chargers. I think Phillip Rivers has made his 200 consecutive start yesterday. I think he's playing exceptionally high level. They've beaten good teams. What have they won? They've won five or six in a row. They went to Seattle and won yesterday. They're making a change with their kicker now, but I think Melvin Gordon is as good a back as there is in the NFL. I think they've got three phenomenal receivers. And if they get Hunter Henry back at tight end, and they are going to get Joey Bosa back at defensive end, I think they've got a lot to look forward to in the immediate future, and they're a team that is leading their division and is going to make the playoffs. So I would say the Chargers would be my third pick.
I'm imagining you knew Jason Witten pretty well as a player. I'm wondering if we had asked you during his career what he would do after football, if you would have said broadcaster automatically.
No, I probably wouldn't have. And I say that knowing when Troy Aikman went to the broadcast booth, I knew he'd be great, even though people were skeptical about it because they never really saw him in any capacity publicly other than when he recognized the gravity of everything he said as a Cowboys quarterback. But those of us who talked to him off the record really understood how truthful he could be, what an analytical mind he had. So I had no doubt he'd be great. I did not think Tony Romo was going to be the instant sensation in television that he was, simply because I had never really seen him criticize or honestly evaluate his own coaches and teammates, much less those on other teams. But he seems more than willing to do that, and he's obviously been hugely embraced by the viewing public. Witten is a guy who, you know, he doesn't crave attention. He's kind of still a country boy at heart. He's a little bit shy. He is an interesting guy to interview, you know, one-on-one, but he's never been a guy who's really craved the spotlight. But from a leadership point of view, I think if he would have been a quarterback instead of a tight end, the Cowboys would have been better served during the last 15 years of his career in terms of having leadership in the locker room that people would follow. But no, I really wasn't sure that he would be wildly successful. But I know this. I know he'll put everything he has into succeeding, and I know he'll react in a positive way to all of the criticism that he's received, and he's probably harder on himself than anybody else is. And I'm sure it hurts because he's always been such a great player to have people criticize him the way that they have. And I'm not sure it's entirely fair because I think a three-man booth is awfully difficult to work, and even though they're technically a two-man booth with a guy on a boogermobile, I still think it's hard. I think there are a lot of times you'll notice during the telecast where Witten makes a point about the offense, and then Booger McFarlane, you know, wants to make a comment to finish the discussion, and it just always seems like there's this element of one-upsmanship that's going on, whether it's intentional or not.
You can follow Ed on Twitter at Ed Werder RFA. Ed, thank you for the time, as always, and we'll see you at the stadium tonight.
Thanks a lot.
I look forward to it. Thanks very much. And, Paul, congratulations on your success and your new endeavors.
Appreciate it very much.
Thanks. Talk to you.
Ed Werder has been our guest, the McCann Award winner and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's on the same plaque with John McClain.
Very important plaque.
It's right there when you enter the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's right there. Not bad.